afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Your Honor.
Would you like to reserve some rebuttal time, Mr. Bigler?
Yes, ma'am. Maybe 5 minutes or less.
Certainly, you may.
Good afternoon. My name is Don Scott. I represent the appellate Lamont DiCarlo Booker in this matter. This case has some very interesting facts. However, I just want to get straight, if you don't mind, a short recitation of the facts, which is basically that the police encountered my client on March 18th in Portsmouth, Virginia. They pick him up. They arrest him. There's some dispute on whether they read him his rights or not. They took him down to the Portsmouth Police Station where he was strip searched. Some say he volunteered to be strip searched. The other says that he did it on his own, but he was strip searched. Shortly thereafter, he was released. He was never read his rights. He was released and given what the police say is they signed and swore out a summons, but they said that it was a fake summons.
Let me interrupt you.
Yes,
your basic argument is that the informant was an anonymous tip and they didn't have probable cause. Well, the first one resulted in nothing found, so that's not a player, is it?
Well, John, I would argue that it is a player because it adds to the totality of the circumstances that when a person encounters the same two officers merely 5 days later with the same charges being filed, I would think that that person, if he's seized by those officers...
Well, here are the facts as I understand it. On the second...
The second encounter. Okay. On the 18th or the 20th? The second encounter on the 23rd?
Just hold on. Let me finish. On the second encounter... This informant was known to the police officer, knew him from a prior encounter, that he had led to reliable information in the past. He had known the person for about 6 years. During that time, the citizen had provided the officer with reliable information regarding narcotics about 20 to 30 times and never provided any information that was incorrect. He recognized both the phone number on the caller ID and the caller's voice because they had previous encounter. Now, would you characterize that as an anonymous tip?
I would not characterize that as an anonymous tip, Your Honor. That was the language that the officer said that he was a concerned citizen. He did not characterize that.
He corrected himself, didn't he? Mm-hmm.
He continued to use the phrase concern. Originally, he called him he confused two terms of art, never an anonymous tip.
Well, that's all right, but the underlying, do you dispute the underlying facts?
The underlying facts of that summary? No, I don't. However, I don't think that meets the definition of the indicia of reliability.
Did you include those facts in your statement of facts in your brief?
Of whether or not I disputed the facts that you just stated?
Yeah.
I do not think I stated all of those facts. No, I did not.
Well, isn't that your obligation to do?
In recounting whether the concerned citizen met
who
the indicia of reliability.
Who had been known to the police officer and had given information in the past, isn't that relevant as to determine whether this person's reliable?
I think that is relevant. However, I thought it was in the record. Also, I thought it was also relevant that that person did not state the nature of the drugs to be found. That also indicated reliability. He did not state the nature of the drugs that would be found. There was no information as to how he came about that testimony and came about that information.
One thing you said is he overheard the guy say that the police didn't find anything because it was in his buttocks.
I understand that, but he did not say how he came about that information. He says that...
He said was he was there and heard him.
And, Your Honor, that's why during the trial I objected to hearsay because I thought that person should have been confronted. And so I also brought that forward with the court.
At the time these drugs were recovered, did the police actually search the defendant?
It was disputed. My client said...
Let's take it in the light most favorable to common.
You take it in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth. Well, the police say that they did not search him.
They asked him if he had anything on him.
In the second
him into the police car so nobody can see you because you can be an informant, right?
In the second encounter?
Yes.
That's what the police, the Commonwealth's evidence is that They pulled up on him the second time and said they had a second call. And then at that time, they told him what was going on. They got a second call, and he consented and gave them the drugs.
Okay, that was the word that I wanted to get.
Yeah. And the issue with me, and the issue on that, Your Honor, is that the case of McGee, which I cited here, says that once you're seized, then you can't consent. That's part of the totality of the circumstances.
Well, that begs the question of whether he was seized or whether that was just a consensual encounter at that point.
And, Your Honor, that's why I said the March 18th information was so valuable, because he had already been seized and strip searched by these same folks. And then he had already been pulled over. The testimony was that they pulled their car up to block his walk on the 23rd in the first encounter, where they searched and they found nothing. And then the second encounter, he was seized again. And that the argument from the Commonwealth position is that he consented to the search. But I would ask that if you examine the totality of circumstances, there's no way that a reasonable person in the position of Mr. Booker would have thought that he was consenting to a search.
Except this issue about him wanting to become an informant, which I assume means work off his transgressions and not be charged,
I think that's why this case was so important, that this information be able to get to a jury. I was not able to even present that information to the jury, Your Honor, because about him going to work as an informant, about the suppression, a lot of that information was, there was a motion in limine filed by the Commonwealth that prevented me from bringing up the information from the 18th, because the 18th information, which Your Honor, Judge Frank just said was irrelevant. The 18th it's relevant because that's when the police used this informant theory to say that on the 18th they gave him this false, they swore a false summons, whereby they were protecting him so that he could become an informant if he wanted to later. But then on the 23rd they say they have new information again. So on the 18th they read, so 5 days later, within the 5 days previous, they had just gave him this false summons where they were thinking that he would become an informant. And then on the 23rd, March 23rd, 5 days later, they say, well, we thought he wanted to be an informant, and that's why we did that. So you can't have it both ways. I think the Commonwealth wants to have it both ways. And what I wanted to do and argue before and put the credibility of the officers, whether someone and the credibility of the case in itself, would someone in his position really believe, after he'd been taken down to Portsmouth Police Station and strip searched, and the officers were reprimanded, what they believed that they were, that he was free to go. And I think that's the issue in this case. And I think it's clear that the case should be, I mean, I think that the evidence that was eventually seized should be suppressed, because his Fourth Amendment rights were clearly violated in this matter.
Counsel, in your assignment of error, you basically say because the police did not have independently verifiable information to form the basis for probable cause, from either the unreliable confidential informant or the concerned citizen. But doesn't that presuppose that there is an anonymous informant talk about verified?
I think both situations, in regard to the first encounter, which did not result in the finding of drugs, I think you have to take them. But I think it's disingenuous to say that we're going to ignore the search that happened 5 minutes before. 5 minutes. So we're talking about the confidential, what the officer called was a reliable confidential informant. I asked the officer, why is he reliable? We went through that. He says that maybe one time, if you look in the record on page 145, one of the times is 140, I'm sorry, page 153, where Detective Hunter testifies. I asked him, how many times have you used him to give you information? He said, maybe one time. That's not indicia of reliability. That does not meet the test. That was his testimony, maybe one time. I believe then the case fails right then. 5 minutes later, they allege that he gets a different phone call, merely 5 minutes later.
Tell me that page again, please.
Yeah, and I want to make sure I'm correct.
Thank you. That's all. You can move on and then, while the Attorney General argues, you can then look at that.
I'll find and reserve it. Yes, sir, Your Honor. But it's in here, quote, unquote, from that officer that he had used him maybe one time.
All right.
So I said that has no indicia of reliability. At that stop, that was an illegal stop. That was an illegal detention. And then the second time when they pulled him over based on what the officer called a concerned citizen, and not a competent reliable form, but he described the concerned citizen's interactions with him as you discussed. And I would argue that concerned citizen, he continued to ask that person be maintain their anonymity. And the court has said in McGee that when you come forward as a concerned citizen that you lose your anonymity. In this case, I was not able to even find out who this person was or verify that information.
But didn't he correct that statement?
No, he never said he was a confidential informant, Your Honor. He kept saying that he was a concerned citizen that he had used before. He described what this concerned citizen had done with him, and he had called him maybe it's like a neighborhood watch type person, but he wouldn't.
Does it make any difference what he calls him as long as his testimony shows that he was reliable?
Your Honor, I would argue as an officer, when he relied on it at time, I think it's important to understand what he believed.
I mean, suppose he said, this guy's a New York Yankee fan, and he's given me information in the past and this, that, and the other. What difference does it make what he calls him if the underlying information shows that information is reliable?
Your Honor, again, I agree with you on that portion. However, I don't believe that he met the test of the full scope of indicia.
All right, well, that's a separate issue. Yeah.
Okay, and that's the big issue. I don't care what he calls him. I really care about whether he was reliable at that point, and I also care about at that time he was detained and it was not a consensual search based on the totality of the circumstances and Mr. Booker's encounters with these same two officers over three separate time frames.
You're already into your rebuttal time.
Okay.
Do you wish to save that time, or would you like to continue?
No, I'll save it.
Certainly you may, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Staller.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I think as the court has already addressed, the important fact here is when the drugs were recovered, which was the second encounter on March 23rd, the police officers had received a phone call from a known phone number. The officers recognized the voice of the person calling and knew this person for 6 or 7 years, knowing that this person has provided 20 to 40 pieces of information related to narcotics that turned out to be verified and had never given them any information that turned out to be incorrect. So this was a person known to the police officer. Whether he called him a concerned citizen, confidential informant, I think is irrelevant. I don't think that's dispositive.
Or a New York Yankee fan.
Or a New York. The label is not dispositive. What is dispositive is what information, what the base of that information is. Here, the informant calling said, I heard the defendant just say that the police didn't find anything because the drugs were in my buttocks. Now, in order to know that information, the person had to be there to know he was searched and to be able to hear the defendant say these things. So the way he came by this knowledge was known to the police officer, which also corroborates the fact that he also previously given reliable information. So when they go back to the defendant and say, you know, we got additional information. If you got anything, turn it over. The guy says, okay, fine. They walk over to the police officer and hands over the drugs. So to the extent he's arguing there was a seizure followed by a search, if there was a seizure, it's fully supported by probable cause that the officer had based on the information he received from the known informant. As Kumhoff argued at the hearing, it's likely this was just a purely consensual encounter. They walked up to him and said, you know, we got additional information. If you got anything on you, now's the time to turn it over. Let's go to the police car and do that. He then walked over to the police car and turned over the drugs. So either if there was a seizure, it's fully supported by probable cause, which police officers had, or it was a consensual encounter. Either way, the trial court did not err in failing to grant the motion to suppress. I'd be happy to answer any court questions the court may have.
I have none. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, I found that site. It's on page 150.
I'm sorry, 150?
Yes, sir. I said, I asked the officer, you said that you used him maybe one time, and his answer was yes, sir. You don't recall that one time, right? I can't recall the exact circumstance the one time. That was it.
Okay.
So, and Your Honor, and address the issue around the terms of art that we use. When you're trying to defend a client, the terms of art that the officers write up, even the information that, because I gathered that information later in court, but if I had known that he was using confidential informant and reliable confidential informant instead of a tipster or whatever he, what or the other terms of art that are concerned citizen, we would have had an opportunity to file separate motions. I would have filed a motion to reveal the CI and some other things. But when they came in and they said, okay, concerned citizen, that changed the whole scope of where I can do it, and I'm basically bombarded at that point. And I would ask that the court reverse this case for that reason. Also, I would ask that the court take into account that the officers both have a duty to inform Mr. Booker when they came to him that he was under arrest. They did not. They detained him. They searched him. They did this. They strip searched him. And I just think that this is a such an egregious case that it deserves some correction.
Thank you, Mr. Scott.
Thank you.
We'll come down and greet counsel.